Okay, this is the Chelan County Planning Commission of April 22, 2026. And it looks like we have quorum. So we can continue. Let's start this meeting. And let's start by reviewing and potentially approving the meeting minutes from last month, which was March 25, 2026. Do people have comments about those meeting minutes before we start, or before we vote? Hearing none, I'd like to entertain a motion to approve.
This is Doug. I move to approve the minutes as submitted.
This is Nick. I'll second.
Excellent. Let's vote. Who's in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Who's against? Motion passes. And it looks to me like there are no members of the public who are party to this meeting at this time. So I think we can just move on to the stated agenda for April 22, which is to review the MALAGA UGA. And staff, would you please introduce this issue to us?
Absolutely. So this is the first of many parts of the comprehensive plan periodic update that you're going to be looking at prior to the formal hearing process. This is a draft. We are in the process of taking comments on the Malaga Urban Growth Area Plan. And so what I wanted to do was bring it to you, share it with you. If you had any questions or comments, there was one question about the attachments that are mentioned in the document itself, and I wanted to go over those briefly. And so I guess before I begin, I just wanted to know if anybody had any specific questions that I could cover while I'm, going over this.
Well, I had a couple.
Okay.
So it said that they wanted to protect the RRI and RR10 parcels from development. That's part of the draft, if I recall correctly. That was part of the reason for getting the UGA, obviously, because it was growth, it's anticipated growth. So I'm wondering, protect them from what?
Do you know where in the plan that language is or where that language came from? I have a copy. I actually have 10 copies.
Okay. So we can move on, like.
Okay, well, the RR10 and the RR5 zone would be going away completely if there was any in the within the boundaries of the urban growth area, which aren't, they're still in, also in draft. We're pretty far along the final boundary of the UGA. But most importantly, what the attempt is to protect the resource land, like the agriculture land and which there's more of up on top. So this would preclude any of that. The intent of this is that there's development pressure on it, and to be able to accommodate the county population growth at the levels that were required to the very low income, moderate income. Malaga was really identified as sort of the last place in the county where affordable housing, however you define it, was a possibility, but only if it was an urban growth area. Also, because of there's a lot of rural village zoning, which allows fairly high density for a rural area. And there's so much industrial zoning that's becoming developed, that it seemed ripe for the opportunity to provide that multi-tiered income housing, and with industrial, that it would be an ideal spot for work and live.
Yeah, that's my question.
Oh.
And I believe when it said protect our it was talking about surrounding areas outside where the UGA would be.
Yes,
Yes. But I
yes.
guess my point that I'm making is that it's hard to protect agricultural lands when the growers aren't returning, when the cost of production exceeds the return the growers receive.
Right.
And I would love to protect agricultural lands because I have lived 95% of my life where I had stepped on a door and hit a pear tree with a rock.
Right,
But
right.
unfortunately, there are forces out there that the county has no control over.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I just don't see how all these orchards are going to stay in business throughout the county, throughout the state, agriculture throughout the country. I just don't see it. Maybe Doug, since he was also a warehouse manager like me, maybe he's seen something different, but kind of novel. And I wonder, is that part, are they going to be something that's in the comprehensive plan? Because I think, the amount of available acres in 5 years when it gets reviewed again, it's going to look a lot different from the agricultural layout than it does today.
Right. And it's not, the short answer to your question is no. The resource lands, it's identified, it's acknowledged, it's a known significant issue. But the focus on this round was housing primarily. Not only housing, but the big things with this round of an update was the housing at all income levels, the climate resiliency, updating the, well, it's called Parks and Rec, but it also is one of the goals was to encourage planning that supported more active lifestyles. And so that's what that part of it is. I know that on the docket for next, especially next year's legislation, they are going to be focusing on alternative ways for agricultural producers to be able to maintain financially with not just the producing, but also with the alternative income streams that make it feasible for farming to continue. I don't have an answer to
Right. And I'm not arguing against
it.
the UGA proposal,
Right.
to be clear.
Yeah.
But my second question is, when the Shasta was the UGA, it's at least 2 decades ago.
There still is.
I know, but I mean, I don't think it has resulted in any public speak over that.
It hasn't. As far as I'm aware, I know that there is a large plat that received preliminary approval, and why it hasn't been developed, I don't know. But Peshastin in the population projections also received no growth, and the population projections actually showed a negative growth pattern for Peshastin. So why they haven't developed it, I don't know.
It seems that, I mean, you can see industry, and it seems like it's really for the industrial society, it seems like a good thing to happen. But I'm wondering if these orchards are going way up in the upper valleys, say, if that would be a more desirable location for people to live than out. I'm not arguing against the UGA. I'm just saying.
Yeah, no problem. Were there any other questions? Anything? Okay. So one of the questions I received before tonight's meeting, in regards to the attachments that would be included with this standalone UGA plan, and the reason why they're not included or were not included in the packet is because Some of them aren't finished yet, and some of them are already on the web, but just didn't get collated into this package because it's not an easy process. But so the proposed UGA map, we're working with the community of Malaga through the Malaga community, the Malaga Colocom Community Council. And that organization has held one meeting on February, April 14th. They're going to hold a follow-up meeting on May 7th, and we're hoping that the UGA map will, boundaries of that will be finalized on May 7th, and if not before then. And so that will be attached to this as part of it once the final boundaries have been decided. The county is going to be holding a Malaga specific comprehensive plan meeting update on May 21st at Mission View Elementary. And so that's really when that UGA boundary is going to go live, so to speak, and go public. The vision plan is the same vision plan that is an appendix of the 2017-2037 comprehensive plan. And so I can make that available and it will be attached to this plan when it's finished. The Malaga land capacity analysis is actually not a separate document. Malaga was rolled into the overall land capacity analysis where our consultants went out and looked at everywhere in the county. They looked at Manson UGA, they looked at the Malaga UGA area with some general boundaries, and then they looked at the county. And basically, what that exercise was for was looking at undeveloped land, underdeveloped land, and land that could possibly be like infill development to determine how much land was actually available to be developed. And so that will be attached once that one is finalized. It is also on our website. The land capacity analysis for the whole county is on there and is on the website. And so there's a link to that. The wellhead protection from nitrate contamination memorandum, that is the Malaga Water District's document, and it will be attached. It has been completed. There is the soil mapping and employment forecasting findings. That is actually looked at what soils are in in that area, how suitable for on-site septic they would be, trying to sort of support the idea that sewer is necessary out in the UGA and you can't have sewer without a UGA. And so that's for what that is. And the employment forecasting findings were a study also done by Points Consulting, who did the land capacity analysis. And that was to look at what the current employers were in the area, in the Malaga area, and what they were contacted about, what their 5-year growth plan was and their anticipated employment numbers. The revised Code of Washington and UGA criteria compliance, that's a state document that will get attached. And then the case law memorandum, I do not have that one yet. So that, but it will be attached. So basically, just a little bit of background. Malaga was identified as one of the last areas in the county where the potential for truly affordable housing was a viable option, which is how it was identified as ripe for being changed from a Lamier to local area of more intensive rural development into a UGA. There are things since that have happened, like the Malaga Water District, who has a wellhead protection area that when they did some testing, found elevated levels of nitrates. And so when the TIF came into play, the Port District had indicated in their TIF planning that they would be pursuing the opportunity or the possibility of sewer going in. And so there is an effort to actually do a study that would result in, let me see if I get this right. It's basically a sewer development plan. It would look at what would be needed, what alternative treatment options would be, where the trunk lines would be extended to, costs, and things like that. And so the Malaga area has seen, like I said earlier, with all of the rural village zoning, it does allow lot sizes. It's either what the Chelan Douglas Health District says each lot would, what size each lot would have to be, but no smaller than 12,000 square feet. Well, 12,000 square feet really isn't a rural density when you're looking at outside of a Lanier, and you've got the smallest would be 2.5 acre lots. And so that was just more of the reasoning behind this effort, and to be able to provide housing at levels that the state says it needs to be provided, and in an area that's already dense, more densely developed and is more densely developing. Plus, if that industrial land gets developed, then there would be that employment opportunities. And so most of what this is an explanation of what I just went over. And there's still, you'll notice when you go through this, that there are still some yellow highlighted lines, and those are, verification of information that needs to be done. And so the reason I wanted to bring this for, before you tonight to have discussions is because next month in May, I'm going to bring for workshop the draft comprehensive plan document itself. And that is on our website. There's a link to it on our website. It's been on there. We put it on there last Monday on the 13th. So it is available for anybody who wants to read through that. And so that's this is just one piece of the puzzle. And so I want to introduce you to the comp plan next month. We're going to be doing the environmental analysis, hopefully in July, of all of the different parts of the comp plan. And in addition to what community development has worked on, the Department of Natural Resources has worked on that PROS plan, the Parks and Rec, which Mike has brought to you. There's also going to be a climate resiliency plan, which is going to be an appendix to the plan, but we also have updated goals and policies that wrap some of those ideas into it. And then there's also going to be a Stehekin community plan. So my hope is instead of having a public hearing before you've had it and just trying to do it all in one lump, I'm trying to bring this to you in more manageable pieces for review. I do have a document that I was hoping to hand out to you, but I will send it out tomorrow. And it is basically a very high overview of the big changes in each of the elements that are posted on the web, just so you can get an idea of what the changes are you'd be looking for. The comprehensive plan on the web is in a red line strikeout version, so you can see what the proposed changes and additions are. And then, so that's next month in May. And then in June, hoping, really hoping, to bring you the climate resiliency and the Stehekin Community Plan. And then in July, I've been told that the transportation element should be ready for our meeting in July. And so, hoping that we can have a public hearing in August. And so, if necessary, we might need to have maybe two meetings in September if we don't get through it in August. So that's the timeline. We're going to be sending, doing the SEPA in July, and then we'll be sending the whole package with everything to the State Department of Commerce for their comments. And then we will have hearings, and then with you guys to make a recommendation, and then we'll go to the Board of County Commissioners, hoping to have the final County Commission action in early December. What?
Nick.
Yes, Nick.
Is Malaga the only UGA that's projecting to have its boundary changed?
Malaga is not a UGA at the moment,
Sorry, I meant,
but no, yeah, it's the only, yeah, there aren't any proposed changes to any of the UGAs in the county.
Okay, thank you.
I'm wondering if we've accounted for the fact that sometimes the industrial data centers and whatnot don't have a large number of employees promised.
Well, data centers are a very another very hot topic. I know that Malaga, through their urban growth area and zoning, are hoping to be able to address that so that it's not anticipated that every industrial site will be data centers out there. Does that? So yes, n we know there's not a huge necessarily on-site employment sector with that, but there's a lot of industrial zoning out there, and it's not anticipated that they will all be data centers.
Excellent. And are we looking into partnerships we can have with the employers to offset some of the infrastructure costs? Should we end up putting sewer and urban services into this area?
This is at the very, 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 I mean, the infancy stage of the sewer exploration. And I know that part of that discussion is looking for outside funding, grants and such that could help with that. One of the stories that I heard from somebody who was involved is when Rock Island, the city of Rock Island, redid their sewer, they actually went around, they had a grant that they actually were able to go around and offer all of the homeowners that were on septic. They were able to pay for them to be hooked up to sewer as long as the homeowner signed an agreement that they would decommission their septic, their drain field and septic system. And apparently they had 100% success. So because individual homeowners hooking up to sewer as it comes in has always been sort of the hard sell, and that's been recognized, I think that there would be an effort to look for something similar to that. Also, with the zoning changes that would be part of this urban growth area, the development regulations to implement it, there would be much higher density. And of course, any new development would have to connect to the sewer. And so, it's a multi-pronged approach, and they are looking at all of those things.
That's great to hear. What questions or comments do we want to bring out at this stage? Are there any tricky spots that you'd like to just discuss?
Not really. It's pretty straightforward. The really, I think, going to be the biggest potential hurdle, and I think we have a pretty good justification, is the State Department of Commerce and the creation of a new urban growth area. They've not said yes, absolutely, or no, absolutely not, but they are not, they're not a very common tool used by counties, and I think the state is not entirely certain how they want them to be considered. And so just that unknown, I would say, could end up being possibly an issue. But as far as Malaga itself, I mean, in some ways it's already been functioning as a UGA. If you look at it, there's a lot of small lot development, half acre, less than half acre lot developments that are relatively new. And so I think what this would do is, instead of it being somewhere in an urban rural limbo and neither twixt nor tween, and give it something to be, with the community's ability to have some significant input in what they want.
Is there a reason it can't become a city? An incorporated city versus UGA?
No, as far as I'm aware, there's absolutely nothing but will, that the will of the people, that would keep it from being an incorporated city. Because that's, from my understanding, I've not done one, mind you, is that is really something that would be initiated by the citizens. And I don't know where they are with that. It's not been something that's come up as a discussion point.
I think there's a concern too about the general size. The small cities are having a terrible time with record keeping, with public disclosure, having to farm out everything from police departments. I mean, it takes five full employees for 24-hour coverage, for instance, and you start adding up all that kind of stuff. Most small cities are really struggling financially. It makes it very, very difficult when you have to outside source so much stuff, and then you create a new entity besides the county, where a UGA with the community council with that kind of idea gives you that same kind of authority. I'm really a little bit more concerned, though. I learned in the fifth grade that if you brought any treats to your meeting that you were supposed to share, and I noticed that Jesse, I don't see him sharing any of the food that he was eating earlier. I'm a little concerned about breaking rules here.
Sorry, sorry, Doug. I'll catch up with you next
Uh-oh.
time.
Naughty, naughty, naughty. So that, I mean, that really is it. And feel free, if you read through it and there's something that you have a question about or a comment or where you can find something referenced, I'll do my best to get that to you. And just wanted to point out that the comment period is really until it's a final action by the county commissioners, and so there's not really a time frame in. I mean, there will be a few specified comment periods, like when the environmental determination is made, but really we accept comments all the way up till and including the day of the hearings, the final hearings. So there's that. So that's really all I had with that. I will send out this high-level overview of the changes for the comp, from the comp plan, for the periodic update. There was one more thing I wanted to talk to you guys about tonight.
Before we move on, can I ask a
Yeah,
question?
absolutely.
With all the intended densities to kind of be almost like a mixed use scenario, does the county code currently have sufficient zoning regulation for mixed use. I know it's not quite the same as mixed use like we would in like a city, but with as much residential that we're putting next to industrial, it's fairly similar in a lot of ways.
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. What the Malaga Calafkin Community Council decided, because we gave them a choice, we have two presidential urban growth areas, and they have each have their own development regulations. In order to avoid creating yet another set of development regulations, what we told the community council was they needed to pick either Peshastin zoning designations that they could tweak to meet their vision, or they could use the Manson development regulations. And they chose to use Peshastin because they felt that that was a little bit more on par with them. They felt that Manson was more tourist oriented. And so the zoning designations are going to be the same that Peshastin urban growth area uses. And then part of the process that we're going through right now is, after we get those boundaries finalized, is getting down to the actual individual proposed zoning for each individual parcel. And so even if it's zoned industrial right now, that doesn't guarantee it's going to be zoned industrial when the UGA is adopted. But the mixed use question is, yes, there are zones in the Peshastin urban growth area that will be used in the Malaga UGA that would allow for the types of housing that the state's requiring be provided. And that includes mixed use.
That's good. That's good to hear. That does make things a little easier, both on your guys' side and everyone else's, not having to learn a whole new set of design standards.
Yes.
To expand on that, though, what about, and maybe you guys have already tackled this with the data centers that are already in place, but what about all the issues regarding noise from the data centers? That's a really big one for across the country, where a lot of really close by residential areas are horribly inundated with noise. Do we already have regulations on that, or is that something we're going to kind of?
Not yet, but that is definitely a topic of conversation, and it's an issue that's going to be addressed specifically. The data center right now, Microsoft is pretty far away from any residential development. I think there might be one house left down there, but most
And
of
I
it is.
wasn't, sorry, I
Sorry.
wasn't specific to that one. I just meant in general, do we have
Right,
something?
right, right. Yes. Malaga plans to tackle that, and noise and the other topic, the other potential issues resulting from data center location, they're hoping to get ahead of the curve with the new development regulations.
Okay, so but that's not something that we are planning to tackle with this, or is that getting pushed onto Malaga to come?
Data centers in general, no. It's not it's right now it's not on the radar for the county as a whole.
Okay, thank you.
So you said that holding that it won't all the industrial won't be data centers, but there's nothing to include that being all data centers. Is there a design or is there a plan for them?
There is nothing at this point. If a UGA and new development regulations are adopted, there could be some, I don't want to say protection because, I mean, look at the number of people who use data center use, but I guess some balance is the way I would put it.
Yeah, because you hear about like China, I think there's about 40% of power is on the data centers, and the user regular rate users saw a big jack up in
Yeah.
there.
Well, Maine actually put a moratorium on them and aren't allowing any new data centers until they can study the issue. And they won't, I think it's 2028 before was when that period ends. So it could definitely come up. It has not and isn't being considered at the moment, other than the UGA of Malaga. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay. Last topic. So remember at the beginning of the year when I said that there's going to be some legislation and code amendments that are dictated by the state, and we have to do these code amendments, but we really don't get a lot of say about what they say, the code amendments. There's going to be three of them coming before you, pretty much concurrently with the comprehensive plan. I'm not going to try and do them at the same hearing with the comprehensive plan elements, but while the comprehensive plan, after you've heard that, we're going to be talking about these code amendments. And one of them will be about adding co-housing definitions and regulations to the county zoning code. And what co-housing is basically where they used to be called boarding houses back in the day. And it's a type of affordable housing where a person or persons can rent a room and then you have a common kitchen and a common area. And so the state passed, I think it was 2024. Don't quote me, I've been looking at a lot of state legislation this last week. That basically said every county and city who plans has to have provisions in their code for this type of housing. And then there's going to be another code amendment that addresses accessory dwelling units. And it's kind of a two-parter within urban growth areas. The county has to allow, or the city has to allow, two accessory dwelling units to be constructed. And so your code has to allow for that. And the other part of that is detached accessory dwelling units in the rural area, in the rural county. We already allow them, so we don't have to add that, but there are regulations about enforcement and after the fact permits and some design regulations that we do need to tweak our code to meet the state's requirements. And then the last one that we have to do but by the end of the year so far is called transitional and shelter, no, transitional and supportive housing. And basically, that's going to affect the urban growth areas, and the county has to provide code and development regulations that allow for two different types of transitional housing. One is meant to be transitional, exactly what it's called, where it's moving through a system from unhoused to transitional, and generally they have a period of 2 years, and then the progression is to into more permanent housing. The transitional supportive housing is doesn't have a timeline, and it is housing that is for people who can't necessarily care or live by themselves, and so they have support services. And so those are the two types of housing. And then the requirements also, we have to develop regulations and provisions for indoor emergency shelters, which is what most of us are familiar with. They stay a night, they stay, and go. And then there's the indoor emergency shelters, and those I believe have a limit of like 30 days, and it's for people who are, moving out of a bad situation that need help transitioning into a be it a safer lifestyle. That's just the definition of those types of housing. So those are the topics of the code amendments that you're going to be reviewing and making recommendations on, fairly concurrent with the comprehensive plan. Like you'll have a comprehensive plan hearing and then you'll be getting these code amendments to look at. So now that I have a better idea of what exactly it is you'll be looking at, I wanted to give you that information. I can give you the specific legislation numbers, and so you could read them for yourselves and be happy to do that. I have all of that information. If you just want to email me, I can give you it. And so if I come across more in my research that also are required to be done this year, then I will let you know. And these are the code requirements that are called preemptive. So basically, whether we pass them or not, the state law is going to prevail. It just makes it just makes it truly easier on everyone involved if it's actually in the code so that we can rely on it and eliminate any confusion at the permitting level should we get there. So that's why we're pressing forward on these code amendments. Whew. So we're going to be busy. Next month is going to be the start of it with the draft comprehensive plan, which you are more than welcome to go look at anytime on your own. And I will send you copies of this document with the highlights so that you can get started should you so desire in all of your free time, which I'm sure you all have.
So, Susan, would it be possible when you do that indoor shelter portion to be sure to include what kind of barrier requirements for each one as far as drug use? I'm hearing some rather disturbing things as far as what restrictions there are on those.
Yeah, I'll need to do the first round of my research was just to identify which legislation coming out the last 4 or 5 years was optional or required, and then identifying which ones had to be done this year with the update adoption. I haven't really gotten into any too much detail as far as barriers and what the county can and can't require. One thing I know is that we can't make them go to an, we can't have them in industrial zones. I do know that. So on the district use chart, all of that still needs to be put together. But right now, I don't have a depth of knowledge on that, in order to be able to answer your question about barriers. And that may be a topic or an area where maybe we do have the ability to supplement the development regulations that the state has put forth. But again, I don't know yet, and I will have that answer before drafting anything or bringing anything like that to you. And that really concludes all that I've got for you tonight. I just wanted to go over Malaga a little bit, let you know that the comp plan's on the website. I will send you this high-level overview of what's different in the comp plan, what we've changed. There's also the land capacity analysis that's on that same web page. If you just go to the community development web page, it's all on there. There's links to it all on there. Happy to answer any questions you might have. We are going to be moving fairly quickly, and as this stuff comes online and I get drafts available, I'm going to bring them to you as soon as I can, so that we can have the luxury of some discussion versus trying to cram it all into one or two or extra hearings to get it through.
This is excellent work that you're including us as we go along.
Well, you're a critical part of the process, so I want you all to. I don't like surprises, and I imagine other people don't care much for them either, so.
Where is the line, or how's the line drawn between what's in the state sort of code, or RCW or WAC, and what the county code implements? The one thing that comes to mind is like the certificate of exemption, and that the state allows down to 5 acres, but the county and different cities have adopted other regulations for that. So where is that line between what the flexibility and what the county has versus what the state mandates?
So generally speaking, a local agency, a local jurisdiction can make, and I don't want to say this wrong. They can't make it less restrictive than the state law. So you can make it more restrictive, but you can't make it less restrictive. So, say, under that same example you used, the certificate of exemption. A county or a city, well, county can't pass a law that says they can get a C of E for a 1 acre lot.
Yeah.
Or they, yeah. So in this case, and then some of the legislation is pretty clear about what a county can and can't do. Not all legislation is like that, and leaves up some stuff is left up to the discretion of the local agency. And so the general rule of thumb, like I said, is we can't be more restrictive than the state, or we can't be less restrictive from the state, but we can be more restrictive. But how that, but then it, what the state says is there are some things in that law that simply say you can't do it. Like we can't funnel all indoor emergency shelters into industrial zoning. And that's pretty specific. And so that's one of the examples I can think of off the top of my head. And that's the kind of conversations that are going to kind of have to be threshed out. Like, what can we do with this legislation? And what can't we do? What does this really mean? And so that's where we're at with that.
Well, and my question is kind of revolves around the ADU issue, and I was unclear. I assumed that's what it was the more risk you could be more restrictive but not less restrictive, and how that would affect the existing rules that are in place in the code regarding ADUs, and if there was a way that the county had to effectively get around the unrealistic state requirements now.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had that conversation yet. And so I know Dina has been thinking about that. But we haven't actually sat down and gone through the state law to see what we have on the books that would meet those provisions that they passed, or where we have to make the changes to make it aligned. So, right now, the state law says that detached accessory dwelling units are optional. The county may allow them. But if they do, you have to meet A, B, C, and D. And so we either meet A, B, C, and D, or we eliminate allowing them in the rural areas. And I don't think that that is what anybody wants. So that's kind of the position we're in.
All right. That's what I assumed, I guess, but I just wanted to know if there had been any discussion about that.
Not in depth, not yet. Not yet. But there will be.
Perhaps there will be a new classification and it's not an accessory dwelling unit, it's something else.
Yeah, I guess we, no idea is off the board at this point, No idea is off the board. It just is off the board this week because this week is comprehensive plan week, and then we'll start moving on. But yeah, I am sure that that discussion will be not only ADUs, but also the transitional and supportive housing conversations will all have to take place before anything is drafted. So,
Right. That's lots of interesting legislation.
yes, indeed. And definitely the focus was. And it has been for the last few years, but it's definitely been on housing and providing housing that's not the typical single family detached on a lot, because not everybody can afford that. And so trying to figure out alternative ways of making ways to for things to be affordable, like the unit lot subdivision provision. And things of that nature.
It's interesting that they're going after, under the guise of affordable, yet they're making like the accessory dwelling units more unaffordable. So they're kind of kids a bit counterproductive. But anyway, yeah, I get what you're saying.
Well, they just want to charge more than we already do, so there's that. But I hear what you're saying. And we have had very preliminary conversations about how and what needs to be done, and definitely looking at what's already in the code, to see, what we can all what we already have that we can use. But it definitely is going to warrant many, many conversations, I'm sure.
Okay, any other comments or topics we want to cover before we close? Hearing none, thanks for the great work towards this, and we'll meet again next month. We're now closed.
Okay, thank you. Nice to see you all.